Welcome back to Inside the Bar Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. I'm Christy Barker, a 25-year retired prosecutor from Savannah, Chatham County, Georgia. It's rare for homicide victims' families to talk publicly about the holes left in their lives by the loss of a loved one. In every case, there is always a nagging worry that they could have done something to prevent the tragedy. Cases of domestic violence are among the worst for family members to process and find peace with. Not because there was necessarily anything that could have changed the outcome, but because there is nothing random about a domestic violence killing. These murders are always targeted at a specific person who the killer claims to love. Originally, when I began this series on Norman Smart, I'd hoped to interview Lauren's cousin, Kylie. I still hope that could happen someday, but right now, the thoughts of the torture Lauren endured at the hands of Norman unleashed a lot of negative thoughts for her, and that we'll have to postpone any interview. Lauren's father, however, had sat down with me and former District Attorney Meg Heap last year. He's given permission for me to publish that interview here. So please join us.
There you go.
Could you introduce yourself?
My name is Barry Brown.
And Mr. Brown, where do you live?
I live on Tybee Island.
Okay. Your daughter was Lauren Brown.
That's correct.
Tell me a little bit about Lauren.
Well, Lauren was the type of girl that would try to save the world if she could. She was very spirited, you know. She had a four-year degree in criminal justice, very smart, and She was going through a bad divorce at the time, and so when she met this guy, she just fell into the hands of the wrong guy, and he took advantage of it, just like any predator would.
So, and just to give a little background, did Lauren grow up on Tybee?
Partially on Tybee, partially. Well, we moved around a little bit because I'm in the building business, so I lived on Southside for a while. We moved to Richmond Hill for a while, and then went back to Tybee. I've got a family house on Tybee, so we were down there pretty much every weekend, every summer.
And you talked a little bit about her falling into this relationship. Tell me what you remember happening with Lauren.
It all kind of went south slowly. I mean,
how
it was kind of hard.
She together with this guy?
A total, probably about 2 years, maybe, I guess, or maybe 3 years. I'm not sure. I can't remember now. I just know that she had a six-year-old son at the time that, you know, me and her mother, you know, tried to help take care of him while she was at school and while she was, you know, back into doing her thing. And it was just basically, I guess the thing really hit us between the eyes is when it got to the point to where we noticed that they were getting further and further away from us. And even it got to where he wouldn't let her mother see the little one. And then when it finally got to the head of it right there, it kind of blew up, then, you know, that her mother couldn't see the little Braden no more. He was a six-year-old. That's when we started trying to get her, you know, we basically tried to get her to, you know, leave her. Well, we didn't know anything about the beatings. She never told us about the beatings. The only way we found out about those was the day she was killed, we found out about most all the violent stuff and all that stuff, and it was kind of a situation where we were sitting there, and the little one was at school, and he had told one of his teachers that his mother was being beat by his stepdaddy. So they had family and children. They made him go to a, I don't know what you call, I guess you'd call a mad behavioral madness or violence classes, which was a waste of time. I really don't have a whole lot of respect for that department no more. But like I said, Matter of fact, he got out of that class the day before he got relief from this class, but it was the day before he killed her. Killed her Saturday morning, June 7th.
How did you find out?
Well, we found out about, we had some friends of ours that live around that area right there, and Sonny got a call that morning and said there was some crime scene tape all around the house. So
where was the house?
The house was on Waltar Road. 17, I can't remember the address anymore, but I said it was some 1700 block, I think, of Waltar Road. And of course, we got the phone call that something was wrong, and the police were there and had crime scene around tape. Well, I didn't think at all. I called the chief of police on Tybee and told him I was headed to Wilmington Island. And for his people to leave me alone. I've got to go there. And he called down there and he come back. He called me back and said, you need to go. So we left to go on down there. And when I got there, the little girl that was a detective wanted to know how we found out about it so fast. And we told her there was a friend of ours that told the crime scene was, we got there, I guess, probably 5 or 10 minutes when you're running 80 miles an hour down Highway 80. Don't take you long to get there. But that's how we found out about it. And we just didn't know. We didn't know what had happened until we happened to look over there in one of the police cars. And he was sitting in the police cars with the two boys.
Who are we talking about?
Norman Smart. Okay. He was sitting in the car with the two boys right there, evidently trying to talk to the six-year-old to convince him of what all happened. And I think he almost had him convinced until the detectives got him in downtown and started asking him questions. And I think
Do you remember what he was trying to get Braden to say?
Something to do with Lauren being on the bed or something of that nature. That, he came in and found her like that in the morning or something like that. Now, how cold this character is he did all this stuff during the night, went to sleep, got up the next morning, took a shower, shaved his head, cleaned his body, cleaned his fingernails and everything else. Then he decides to call 911. I don't know to this day if he didn't call his mama first, because she was on the way to town to get them two boys and would have got them if it hadn't been for Detective Ross.
Okay. And let's talk about the police investigation. How did you feel about it?
Well, at that time right there, I felt fine about it. I still feel fine about it. I think they did a couple of the officers there, I think they got a problem going on with that, but I think they corrected that problem. But all in all, I think they did a great job. I mean, they kept us in suspense all day long. I mean, we didn't know what was going on. I guess we finally thought to ourselves, there's he's sitting over there, and she's nowhere around. So we got the feeling, by lunchtime it wasn't good. So
what did you find out as the investigation and all this stuff went on?
Basically found out that he just, they come in, I guess he was at the quarter. I guess not the quarter, novelty bar, whatever the bar is on Wilmington Island. He's down there drinking. From what I understand, he came home that night. And he always had these pair of gloves that kickboxers use. And she had gone outside. She tried to leave. As he left, she was trying to leave, but he stabbed one of her tires in the truck. Flattened the tire, so she didn't have anywhere to go. And she was trying, I think she had the boys' bags and stuff all together, and they was fixing, she just let him go, and then she was going to go. But then when he found out that she did, he stabbed her tires and threw her keys out in the yard. And I do remember, just it's kind of vague, I remember bits and pieces of it. But when they finally told us, when they finally come outside, and I think Detective Ross want us to go downtown, but we didn't hear anything during the day. I mean, the police officers were going in and out of the house. Bob Rice was the chief of police at Tybee. He was there most all day right then. He was back in two with me, but I don't think he ever, he knew what had happened, but he never told me what had happened. So, and doing all that, finally we got to the police station and found out that he come in there Saturday night and just beat her to death. His hands and feet were considered lethal weapons. I wish I'd known that, but it's, too little, too late.
Right. You found out a lot, I think, after. What did you find out about his history with women?
Oh, when they got to going investigating everything and all, I'd heard different pieces about him, being just, you know, not that physical, but then I found out that his previous girlfriend, he pushed her through a sliding glass door and cut a big gash in her leg. And during when we went to court with her, that's when Clay Metz asked her the question, and she denied anything happened. It was just an accident. And like I said, we were running around there trying to get everything straightened out, and we were trying to avoid the mama.
Well, that was a girlfriend that was here, right?
Yes, and I think she was a big contributor in what really happened. Just was no evidence there to prove it.
You actually had to fight to get custody of
this child. Yeah, we actually, you know, the child was undernourished, and that's nothing that Lauren would have done, you know, on her own, because, I mean, it's just not like her. Of course, she was undernourished, too. I found out later, too. She wasn't about 100 pounds. And she was normally about 130, 140, and she was about 5'8 or 5'9. A beautiful girl, had the whole world to live for, and that animal took it from her. Took it from her and her kids. But I don't know, you know, I can't remember all of it, but like I say, it was pretty rough, and I would not wish this on my worst enemy, although I wish to see him dead one day.
Can we talk about the trial just a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Were there things that happened at the trial that surprised you?
Well, no, not really. I mean, I was surrounded by county sheriff's department. I mean, they wouldn't let me scratch my nose without jumping. You know, so, I mean, it's just, you know, the autopsy report, Sonny and I got up and walked out. I did not want to hear that, although I heard about it later, what all went down, but I didn't want to hear about it that day. And I couldn't understand. He filed for some kind of a motion to have a fast, speedy trial. And I think that was just basically trying to hope to stump somebody up. He's very clever. His mother was very, very in tune to the law in Ohio. Actually, I think she worked in the sheriff's department, which got him out of trouble. He was in jail in Ohio for the same thing and was released early on the grounds that he would come with this girlfriend of his to Savannah, to Tybee Island. Now, why they released him early, let him come from state to state, we've been fighting, trying to get some kind of registration going. And Meg's been working on it. We're still working on it. And we just, you know, Jesse Petrie's working on it, Buddy Carter's working on it. I mean, we're trying to get some kind of registration where they're a violent criminal. You got to let somebody know in the precinct that you're going to, you got to let them know you have a record. But then they all about these rights about this and rights about that. Well, you know, what about the victim's rights? I said, it's all about the victims. They had nothing to do with them. I could tell you a few things what I'd like to see them done, but that's, you know, that's back in the savage days of the world. But like I say, it's just, you know, we need some kind of base. And that's not going to be like a sex offender's base, but need some kind of base for they at least got to contact the local authorities. And I'm here, this is where I'm staying at, you know. You ain't got to broadcast it. You just got to let people know, you know, around them. Just being. And actually, the girl that brought him here still works on Tybee for a real estate company. And from what I understand, they couldn't do nothing with her because she was such a good employee. I don't know.
I remember something about Lauren writing letters. What do you remember about that?
Lauren always wrote letters. She wrote letters since she was a little kid. She'd write letters to her mom up on the door saying she was sorry about doing something. She'd write letters to me, and it was impossible, you know, for her to stop her writing. And I just ran across something in one of my old trucks. I had a recorder on the door, I mean on the sun visor. And she evidently got there one day somewhere along the line and left me a couple of messages on that recorder. And I mean, it's pretty heart-wrenching when you play with that recorder. I fixed to give the truck to my grandson. And I was sitting there pushing the button, listening to it, and I made some comments. I recorded some stuff, and I got it on my phone. And, you know, if y'all want to hear it, I'd be glad to, you know, play it for you on the phone, but it's just I heard that, and I like to fell out the truck. And,
actually, I would be really curious about that. But were there letters that had been doing this?
Yes, she had written a letter, and evidently, she was always writing letters to God, and she wrote this letter to God, and evidently, either he tore it all up or she just tore it all up, but it's shredded. And I'll have to give the police department credit for this. Put that mess of paper back together and be able to read it was something amazing. But he, you know, Ross's people put it all back together and everything. And I mean, it's, it was basically what was going on and asking God to help her get out of that situation. And I think she had done so much text message back and to her mom and I that she was just scared that we wouldn't take her back in the house, but that wasn't be the case. Wasn't going to take him in the house, but was going to take her kids in. But like I say, after you threaten to kill him and you threaten to get yourself killed and you think you're talking to your daughter, next thing you know, you're talking to the SOB that was writing the text back at you. So you don't ever know who's texting you, by whose phone. If they're on her phone, it could have been, it was him.
And that actually was something that came out of the trials. He used her phone.
He used her phone, yeah. The text messages to us, and us thinking it's her. So he used the phone and everything against her to try to separate the two of us. I mean, it's a divide and conquer thing with these people. If they can separate you from your family, they get total control of you. Then they start trying to starve you to death. The child had mono, a one-year-old child. He was six days from being a year old, and he had mono. When we first got him at the police station, he wouldn't come to me at all. I mean, he's terrified of me. Never seen me in his life. But he went right straight to Sonny like he'd been knowing her the whole year he'd been married, the whole year he was alive.
Sonny and Lauren look a lot alike.
Mm-hmm. They look a lot alike.
The eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, what has been your goal? I mean, you talked about this database. Y'all have done a bunch of work with domestic violence. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, my goal is, you know, basically, we just don't know how much Lauren actually knew of his background. So my goal was to try to get a domestic violence, you know, registry going, or call it what you want to, like you can call it an administration thing or whatever, that if you're coming from a state to state, that you have to notify people that you're, that the city you're living in. So they, you know, they can notify whoever they need to notify to let people know exactly what your background is. But that's what we've been working on. I forgot now, I've been working on so long. Wasn't a database. We turned it into a
more of a
notification type thing. You know, you call things a registry and that kind of stuff. You change names on it, it's the same thing, but it means the same thing, but just a different way of saying it. It might be a little bit easier to get that done because I met with Jesse Petrie and some ladies out of Atlanta. And they were more worried about, by locking both parties up, that the female or the male, because I've got friends of mine that their sons, I got one in particular, their nephew was stabbed 17 times by his wife while he was sleeping. And they just, you know, regardless of what's going on, they need to arrest both of them when they're called to that situation. If the children involved, call DFACS. But by getting both of them out of the house, they would have been able to separate them. But they don't do that. But now, if we can get that law written the way you arrest both of them, you get them both away from each other, get the kids out of the way. And I think if somebody had taken the kids from her, she'd have left him. But unfortunately, the...
Do you think she stayed in it for the kids?
Uh-huh. I think she stayed in. She's, you know, I think he's threatened to kill. He threatened to kill us. He threatened to kill the kids. You know, but like I said, I think she might have stayed in because of the kids. But the kids would be safer by her taking the chance, by any girl taking the chance and running.
We all have volunteered with Safe Shelter. Is that right?
Right. We've basically got a thing set up for Lauren Brown's legacy, and it's a place that people can donate money to if they need to donate it. And if the girls can't go into safe shelter, we can find a place for them to stay in a hotel for a couple of days or whatever. Whatever it takes to get them away from these people. I'd prefer them to come to Tybee because I know they'd be safer down there. They have a one way there and one way off. And other ways underwater. And they ain't going to take that way. But I mean, it's just a way to, you know, they want, and we've offered it to this other girl. Now, I don't know. I don't control it. My niece controls it. And it's not Kylie, it's another niece, but it's, to be honest with you, I don't even know what bank it's set up in right now. All this set up is Lauren Brown's legacy.
The Coastal Children's Advocacy Center, was there treatment that they offered for the children?
Yeah, that was downtown on 40th and Habersham, I think it was. if I remember correctly. They took Braden in. Phoenix was too young. They took Braden in and all. And he, actually, we was there the Monday morning after it all happened. No. I want to say it was the Monday morning after it all happened, because, no, it wasn't then. It had to be after we got through trying to keep the boys. When he had mono, we took him to the doctor. And as we went to the doctor, his mother showed up at our house with papers. Norman's mother showed up at our house with papers signed by him to give her the kid to go back to Ohio. So we just never went back home. We just stayed away from the house. I made some phone calls. We went to some friend's house in a different county. We stayed there for overnight, and then we come back, and the police department, you know, they did what they could do to prolong it, you know. She wanted to come in the night before. And I can't tell you what I'd done that woman the night before, her knocking on my door with papers to take them kids. Because that'd kill me and the wife, and I wasn't going to stand for that. I just didn't hurt us enough.
But legally, you got custody.
Legally, after going through all the motions and all for three or four years of going through all this, I think we finally got custody of the boys through Judge Abbott and Penny Freeman. They did that work on it, and great people. Never met them before a day in my life, but I met them during all this. But I mean, they did a great job with that, and then. Bernie, the adoption lawyer.
Bernie Bull.
Oh man, he's a character. Lord have mercy, he's a character. Bernie Bull. Yep, that was him. And we didn't realize at the time that both of these daddies, they both had two different daddies, but at the time that their daddies still had legal parental rights to these kids. Until we got rid of the parental rights right there, we couldn't adopt them. So we had to go to court on two separate occasions to get one of them. We couldn't find one in Florida, couldn't ever track him down. So she got him for abandonment. And the other one, we got him in court. And when he spoke about that over through that phone, I guess I twitched. And Bernie said, "Don't say nothing," because I wanted to cuss him out. I wanted to cuss him out so bad. Bernie said, "Don't say nothing." I said, "Okay." Anyway, he come and tell us that, you know, he didn't know how it happened. And this is all during the adoption procedures. So anyway, yeah, we got them both adopted. Names have been changed. Yeah, the names have been changed to Brown. Matter of fact, the little one's name's been changed three times because Sonny didn't like the second name she come up with, so he's been changed it back to the first name. I mean, it's this bit of stuff. We're going to name him Finn, and of course he come up to her at soccer practice. He says, "I don't like being called Finn. My name ain't Finn. My name's Phoenix." So, you know, we keeping that. We won't let anybody show their pictures on their current pictures on the classroom at school or anything. We don't sign the papers that they can be used as a, I don't know, sports or anything. They usually show the back of their heads. Because I was told by the detective Ross, I'd be looking over my shoulder the rest of my life with that family. And I believed him.
Why do you think that this district attorney's election is important?
It's very important right there. We've got a great district attorney right now. And I don't know this other person. I don't know where they came from or, you know, what degree of law they got or how long they even been in a lawyer. But the one we have now, as far as I'm concerned, is fabulous. So I think but her team and her girls, you, and I think it was Jenny. Is it Jenny? You and Jenny, you did a great job in court. And I mean, it's just, you know, when you got teams working together like that, you get the convictions you need that need to be convicted to people. And I can say this, you know, it's, I think, you know, my personal opinion, I think we got a great one in office right now.
The one thing is, so at the same time you're trying to get justice for your daughter, you're fighting to save your grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're also grieving. Can you, I mean, I know it's hard, that must have been such tremendous pressure and grief at the same time.
It was, because, I mean, you just body, I mean, I think God has a way of putting your body in neutral, that where you really don't know what you're doing, and you're just getting up and doing it. Because at the same time, what most people don't understand is we weren't even able to plan her funeral, because we were fighting his mother for custody of the kids. So we had to go out and try to find us a lawyer. And I had Mr. Enfield was going to help us out some, And then he couldn't do it because he felt like it was going to get a little bit more than he could handle. So here we're trying to find a lawyer, and I'm calling the lawyers I know, and they don't do that kind of work, and just one thing or another. And then somebody got Clay Metz to come help us, and I mean, Clay was a wonder. I mean, he basically saved my wife and I's life because we were ready to just go ahead and just eliminate that family altogether because we didn't want to have to worry with them no more.
So, again, you're dealing with grief. You've lost this daughter that you absolutely adored, and now you're raising two kids you hadn't expected. You aren't in your 20s anymore, so
no.
That has just been, and you love them, but mm-hmm. that is not something you expected either.
No, that's kind of something we were just kind of given, you know, that, and I mean, if it weren't for us, they had nowhere else to go except with his mother, and his mother would make them the same way he was. Because I found out later that his mother was one that really orchestrated all this domestic violence. His brother's been convicted of it, his sister's been convicted of it, and now he's been convicted of it. So his whole family is rotten as far as I'm concerned. But like I said, I mean, they just bad people. But you're right, we were not anticipating. This was supposed to be our so-called golden years. Well, they turned to. What would they turn to? They wouldn't be gold. I wouldn't say it's golden. I'd say it's pretty much another world altogether. Now we've got a pandemic, and now we got to learn how to teach school, which neither one of us are school teachers. And I was at the Fort Wayne. I wouldn't even retire. I wouldn't retire. I'd just stay working right there just so I could pay tutors, you know, because I mean they're doing stuff that I'd never seen before. Got one going to sixth grade and one going to second grade.
Do you see your daughter in them?
Mm-hmm. Especially Phoenix.
Really? And this is typical domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only does he physically abuse her, but he probably controls every move that she has and starts to warp her belief of herself.
Mm-hmm. The only thing they found that he was feeding them was something called ramen noodles, that's what it is. College kids eat them, I think, a lot.
They do.
Well, that's the only thing he was feeding because and she'd also bought a boat from somebody that was down at the Bull River Marina down there. And we went down there to find out about this boat thing because we had this, I don't know how we come about the boat. We was trying to find the boat or whatever anyway. I mean, it's been a roller coaster ride. But we found a lady that they bought the boat from. He made the first payment. He was supposed to go make another payment that Friday afternoon. And instead he went out and got drunk up and didn't make the payment for the boat. So we found that lady. Be honest with you, I couldn't tell you what her name is, but we found her and she just she thought it was kind of odd for Lauren to be coming up there with the kids in the truck and Lauren hanging out the window trying to eat a Wendy's hamburger. I said, "Do what?" And she said, "Yeah, she was hanging out in the window trying to eat a Wendy's." I said, you didn't think that was odd? She says, "Well, I thought it was odd, but she said, the first time I looked at him, she said, I didn't like him." And most people that got around him were kind of scared of him.
He was an MMA fighter?
He was in it for two times, I think. The first time he might have won, the second time he got his brains beat out. I'm kind of hoping they do that in prison to him every day. Somebody just beat him to death or become somebody's girlfriend. I can only hope and pray for that because, I mean, I don't think Braden will ever rest. Not until he knows he's gone.
He's afraid
mm-hmm.
that he's going to come back.
Mm-hmm. He's afraid he's going to come back. He's going to get him and his little brother. So he tells us that, you know, every now and then because, I mean, that's all, you know, that's all they know is what, you know, how traumatic that thing. But anyway, that helped the lady at Safe Shelter. We kept Braden in that therapy.
At the Advocacy Center?
Yeah, Advocacy. We've kept him in that for probably close to 2 years, every week. Every week, I think it's close to 2 years. And finally, the little girl, I can't remember her name. I think her name was Christy, I think. But anyway, she said, you know, we'll give him some time. She said, he'll start coming back out as he, more will come out when he gets to be 11 or 12 years old. And she's predicted the future because it's coming out. More and more every day he'll come up with something that he hadn't told us before. And
I bet that's hard for you to hear.
It's hard. It's hard to hear, but I mean, I just know he's got to do it to get it out. And if he don't get it out, then it'll be eating at him. And for Phoenix to come, and this is what Phoenix blew me away yesterday, the other day, when me and him was in the truck. Other than the time he comes up and wants me to do mathematic problems with him while I'm trying to drive. But anyway, he come up, he says, sometimes he called me Papa, sometimes he called me Daddy, and he called Sonny Mama. But he says, did my daddy kill my mama?
What did you say?
I said, yeah. I said, he did. I said, we haven't said anything to you about that. We was hoping to get you a little bit older before we explain things to you. But he said, well, he's in jail for life, ain't he? I said, yeah. So I guess either. I said, how'd you know that? How'd you find out? And I thought one of the other kids told him. He said, I just figured it out. I said, you just figured it out from what? He said, we'll figure it out from this, you know, and, you know, going to the cemetery and, you know, doing this and doing that. But I think some of the other kids told him. He's not going to tell on him because he's scared of him. They get in trouble. But he did. He asked me that question. I went home and I got back home. I told Sonny, I said, this is what he asked me to truck. She said, oh, my God, what did you tell him? I said, yeah. I ain't going to lie to him. I told him, yeah. I said, you know, but the thing about it is he's going to know sooner or later. So, you know. And actually, it's, you know, it's about time. I mean, he's, you know, he's probably IQ's way up there, you know, so he's smart enough to figure things out, you know. But I don't know. It's just been a hard day, hard road to, you know, get up in the morning, go take one to school, go back and get the other one to school, and now they don't go to school at all. Now we got to learn how to teach somebody something that I don't know nothing about. So I told Sonny, I said, fine, that's a tutor. Somebody can come in and teach these kids something. But that's about my life. My life's been going on since about like that since then. So, you know, I still try to work a little bit, but, you know, hope so too. I'm praying that'll be over with shortly too. But anyway.
Your hands are full.
Yeah, my hands are full. I told him I just can't do no more. I just, Sonny's about to have a nervous breakdown now. So I said, you know, y'all just do what you got to do and hope for the best when it all turns out. But, you know, it's something else, but, you know. We'll get through it somehow or another. I just told somebody the other day, I said, I got to go get my medicine, so I'll live another, let's see, 12, 7, 8, 9. My, you know, I was trying to add it in my mind. I said, I got to live at least another 20 years.
What is it? The good Lord is willing and the creek don't rise?
That's right, exactly.
Have they recovered?
Braden's still terrified of that man. And Phineas don't pay enough attention to him to know what he's doing and what he ain't doing.
Braden was old enough to witness.
He witnessed it. Now, I'll tell you what, Phineas is very smart, and he's done, he could come up one day, and we were sitting there, and he just started, well, he woke up one morning, hollering, screaming, stop it. And evidently, that's what he heard his mama screaming that night.
You know, I think it's important is, you know, if you're charged with a crime, you have a right to an attorney. But the victims, you know, this was your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the system treated you fairly?
I do. I think the system was very good. I think they tried to, I can't find the other picture right now, but I'll find it in a minute. But I think they did very good as far as the defense, the team that worked, you know, to prosecute him. I think everybody worked, you know, they got all the facts together. They proved the fact he was, you know, he made up all these stories about people breaking in the house and doing all this, doing that. It was him all the time. The one thing I regret is Detective Ross didn't get those gloves. He sent his buddy in that house. Do you know his mother stayed in that house that next night?
She came down. I mean,
yeah, she came
like
down.
A long drive, and she was there before almost y'all were there, right?
Yeah, she was on her way there when Detective Ross found out that the detectives in the street give the kids to this ex-girlfriend of his to go take home and get them out of the car. And she was going to meet that girl to get those two kids, and she had plans to take and go back across to Ohio. And that's how Ross interfered with him and told him, go find that girl and get them kids up to the police station. So I think they were doing stuff that I wasn't even thinking about. You know, I didn't know where they were. I just know that girlfriend and that detective, not the detective, yeah, the detective told us that they're gonna let the kids go with a neutral party, and my wife just went, she just come unglued. She's screaming at the lady and everything else. That girl's not a neutral party. She's this other love affair, you know, and that's what, you know, that's the whole thing. And then they got here, and then they got them up there and took them to the police station. And I didn't, you know, you just kind of go through these motions, you know, that you just don't know. You really don't know what you're doing, to be honest with you. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I'm normally pretty in self-control, but I was just, you know, going. It's been hard. I mean, the two kids that we didn't, like I say, we didn't expect to be raising these kids at our age, but you know, we're doing the best we can. And I mean, both of them, I think that both of them are very smart kids and all that stuff. Little ones, he's a little bit beyond his time, but you know, he already knows everything, so you don't have to teach him much. He's about like his mama.
Uh huh. Lauren had a lot of spirit.
She had, well, he's got twice that much.
She had a great smile.
Yeah, and I mean, she would just, she was, like I say, it's on her tombstone that she'd light the room. I'd take the, she'd wake the morning sun up right there. You know, so it's on her. I'm gonna turn this thing down before it goes off in a minute. But it's quite interesting. Let me see if I can find that thing that you asked, Christy asked about. Oh, this might, is that it? No, that's not it. I find it's just, yeah, Kylie had some video and all of it. Oh, here it is.
Lauren had a husky voice.
Yeah. Listen. I'll listen to this right here if I can. See, it's on that side recording. I have to remind myself. That's our other grandson.
Lauren's voice, like Lauren's legacy, will always leave something there to remind all of us to take nothing for granted. I'm so grateful to Barry Brown for his willingness to talk about the murder of his daughter and his efforts to protect and raise her children. People rarely understand the far-reaching ripple effects that murders have on families and on our community as a whole. It's critically important to have services and systems in place that the community can trust to follow through and protect victims and their families. As listeners have already learned, Sergeant Chris Ross is part of that system. I will be interviewing him again to walk through the timeline of events that led to this final confrontation between Norman and Lauren, and to talk about how Lauren's tragic efforts to protect her parents and her children from Norman's rage proved to be too much for her. Join us in a couple of weeks.